Hello, and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman.
And I'm Andy Rao.
Andy, it is December, it is cold, it is snowing in Michigan, and I don't know if I'm happy about it, but...
It's at least been pretty picturesque, at least today. Yeah. I'm looking out the window now, there's like a light dusting of snow is drifting down I don't know, how many weeks before it's just a miserable slog, would you say?
I mean, for me, it's usually about 2 days.
Yeah. There's always this like very bleak moment in like mid-February in the Midwest where there's like dirty snow everywhere and it's you're sloshing around and you realize like this could go on for like 3 more months.
I think I don't think we talked about it on air last time, but we were talking about I just finished up Left Hand of Darkness. Like the last like third of that book or so is this like journey across this like vast snowy expanse, right? And just like there's part of that book that just really reads to me as someone who understands what winter is really like. Yeah,
absolutely. Hey, can I put you on the spot with a question about that?
Yeah, of course.
I'm gonna ask you, can you name one thing that you took from that very well written and compelling travel sequence that will inform your next in-game travel sequence? Because we've had whole episodes about this.
Yeah, no, that's really good. So something I really like narratively that she does with that is, so she's kind of going back and forth between two different characters in that section, and it changes she even changes sort of the style of how they recollect what happens. During the journey. So like one person is very much like writing down like all the like the facts that happen, and another person is very much like associating the emotions and things like that. So then at the end of it, at the end of the journey, right, like I don't think it's a big spoiler that they you know they get through and they're having conversations with other people about the journey. And the person who's very like kind of facts and figures oriented is surprised to hear the other person sort of recollect like the whole story to someone else, because it's a very like, I don't know. Oral tradition culture, right? So like they remember all of these like these points, but also they can kind of weave it into a story at the same time. So all that to say, the next time I might do like a travel sequence, I think that might be, if I don't want to run the actual travel part of it, I think what I might do is fast forward to the, like, you are, you're telling someone else about this, like in the tavern the next day, like what are sort of the highlights that you would pull out of it. Right. And then maybe we could even do like flashbacks to those individual, like some kind of interesting incidents that happened along the way too.
Yep.
So it's like, yeah, just skip it and then go back and like kind of, yeah, have the players sort of tell you what happened and how they overcame some stuff. So
I love it. Yeah. Okay, well, thanks for allowing yourself to get derailed. So back to you.
No, that is totally fine. Yeah, it's a really good book, of course. You know, go read it. So the other book thing that I wanted to mention. So again, this is a series that is not for you, Andy, but I wanted to bring it up in case it's for someone else. The Dungeon Crawler Carl series, I think it's the 7th book just came out. So I've been reading that. And it's very dumb. It's very silly. I enjoy them greatly. And again, Andy, you would hate it. It's just full of like puns and things like that. But yeah, it's really great. Yeah. It's part of this like lit RPG lit.
Yes.
Like genre where it doesn't even like try to, I don't know, obfuscate the fact that it's sort of tying into RPGs and video games and stuff like that. It just sort of embraces it.
I've read books that like, I've read fantasy books that have done nods to gaming kind of, and I've read fantasy books that started out as gaming campaigns that the author wrote into novel form. So what is different about this? Is it just the level of like fourth wall breaking or something like that?
Yeah, a little bit, but it's also like, it gets down to even like stuff like characters will be introduced and described and then given, like you'll learn the level that they are and like what spells they have access to, you know, those sorts of things. Right.
That's so pretty funny. Is that like in the margin or something like that?
Like, no, it's like full, like, it's like, hey, you know, here's this brand new character, right? Like you're meeting this, like this like orc captain, right? For the first time, he's level 78 and like, he has access to, you know, level 15 puddle jumper spell, right? It's like, Wow. Yeah, stuff like that. You know, it's fun sort of in fiction, right? Because you're getting to know, like, oh, like, this is how this spell is used sort of in this game. And it's like, oh, that person has this one. Like, that means they could do, you know? Right, it's very similar to how you might interact with stuff in a video game.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds amazing. It's absolutely not for me. But I feel like in this brief discussion, I have all I need of that, and I'm glad it exists, and I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Yes, I am enjoying it. I've also been, so my son and I both had strep throat last week. So I started this book while I was like hopped up on pain meds and antibiotics, and also like just sort of like going in and out of like a fever dreams and stuff like that. Not an ideal way to start a book, but also, you know, kind of fun. I'm like thinking back to the first 10% of the book, where I'm like, I don't think I should probably reread that.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, like, to tie it back to, you know, like, tabletop games and stuff, like, there might be something interesting you could do with, like, hey, your character is super sick in the game, right? In the game world. I don't know exactly what that is, but, like, there is something about the experience of being sick, kind of being laid up in bed, that, like, it's very different from your normal day to day, because it's like your body just sort of shuts down, and it's like, I don't know. Like, it seems like there should be a way to have that show up at the game table, but maybe it's just, I don't know. Maybe that's too human of an experience to try to translate into the long campaign that you're doing.
This is we should do an episode about this sometime, but yeah, when I was like a young GM, and I was just doing what the book told me. I didn't really have the context of being in like an RPG community where you kind of started to grasp, you know, basic like general patterns of behavior. There's rules in the Middle Earth and Rollmaster. There's like detailed rules for like contracting illnesses of various types and what it does. That was one of the things, along with detailed encumbrance, that I jettisoned pretty fast. Well, obviously this is not going to work at the table, but people have taken cracks at making illness and disease and stuff more than just a -2 on attack rolls for 3 days.
Because it's because the reality of like being sick in the real world is like, sometimes you can do stuff, and then sometimes it's just like, it's a disaster. too. Yeah. So it's like, I don't know. It's, you almost want to just use it as like, okay, well, I don't know. Like, Johnny can't make it the session this time, so just go ahead and have their character like just be sick or something like that. Yeah. They're just out.
I had a week at work. I was quite sick, but I insisted on working anyway. And I thought, this was years ago, and I powered through, and I was so pleased with myself. And like the next week I looked back, and I had done everything I had done that week was just wrong. That was a big mistake.
This is a very much a tangent, but this also sort of reminds me of, like, I don't know, a pet peeve of mine is in TV shows when like there's sort of someone is generically sick, and then another group of people is sent off to do sort of generically get the medicine to fix them. Yes. Right. Like I went to the doctor and they gave me a very specific antibiotic to fight strep throat, like just some sort of random medicine that we found in like the rundown pharmacy on the edge of town.
You're just going to crush those leaves into like some water. Like, what's the dosage? Eyeballing this?
I'm going to need a ruling from Aragorn on which leaves to, which leaves to crush.
That's great.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I've taken us on too many tangents. So Andy, you and I were chatting in Discord about something that we both wanted to sort of talk about just on air. We realized we're getting excited about it. So why don't you introduce our topic today?
Yeah. So in the last couple of weeks, I had two game experiences that made me think a lot about the tactile feel of the mechanics we use in role-playing games.
Yes.
One was I played in Wick and Wander. Mm-hmm. And that game, its resolution mechanic, it's a card-based game, although it's a different it's as far I have not seen cards used in exactly this way as a resolution mechanic. But in that game, when you want to do something, you draw cards off of your deck until you get a card that says that you succeeded. And then the number of cards you had to draw to get to that point dictates how successful the action was.
And yeah.
I was delighted. Like that was, I was delighted by this mechanic because mm-hmm. it felt really good to me. Just there's something about drawing cards that it felt good, and we can unpack that. And then more recently, I played in the card game Arkham Horror, and that game, like a number of Fantasy Flight's other board and card games, its resolution mechanic also does not use dice. It uses it uses chits in a bag. And so when mm-hmm. you want to attempt an action, you reach into the bag, you maybe give the bag a little token shake, and then you pull out a chit, and that chit has a number on it, and that helps you determine whether you succeeded at what you're trying to do or not.
Yeah.
And I don't like that. That yes. doesn't feel good to me.
Yeah.
I know why they do it, and there's reasons, if we want to get into it, why they're doing it that way, and that it has some advantages that other resolution mechanics don't have. However, it feels really bad to me for mm-hmm. For totally irrational reasons. I don't have any objective, but that felt bad to me. And so, that got me thinking, we often talk about like how it feels good to roll dice, right? Or there's mm-hmm. something about, grabbing a handful of D6s and throwing them out on the table. There's something that has a very tactile appeal to that. So can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah,
like what, yeah. how does the mechanic we use to determine success or probability in a game, how does that affect like the feel of the game? And how does that inform your understanding of like the odds that you're working with mm-hmm. and the likelihood of success? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Because like mathematically, you can kind of break all these systems down to just sort of like, yeah, the probability, right? Like of just, your percentage chance of getting the result that you want.
Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah, you could, in that regard, all these things are interchangeable, right? Like all these different resolution mechanics are interchangeable because what we're really after sort of is just like a formula. Or yeah, like kind of an end result, right? Of like, okay, yeah, you got this number, you got this color, you got this whatever, right? And we've abstracted that out into whatever we want it to be in yeah. the rules. All that said, I'm with you. Like the pull the chits out of a bag just feels terrible. Like I don't like it yeah. at all. And I could not tell you why. I think there's something about it that maybe feels like there should be some skill involved, but it like just totally removes the skill. Like I don't like the physical act of like reaching into something that I can't see to like grab something. Like it makes me feel like I've dropped like a bolt underneath like a like in the garage and I'm having to reach under some like dusty thing to like grab. Like it's just like there's nothing about it that feels good
yeah.
good to me. But maybe for Arkham Horror that's actually perfect, right? Because you're not supposed to feel good in that game necessarily, like narratively.
Yeah, a couple of quick thoughts. So I don't drawing, there's some types of resolution don't feel like, I don't know what word I'm looking for, like accurate or precise mm-hmm. or like drawing something out of a bag feels like it's mushy.
Mm-hmm.
Is this really a truly random thing that I'm doing? I mean, it for all intents and purposes, I think it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it does. I don't feel confident that I'm getting a random result in the way I do when I roll a D20,
yeah.
which I realize is not entirely rational. You can roll a die, you can roll dice in ways that decrease how purely mathematically the odds are going to work out. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've all done like the more of the drop the die than roll the die,
yes, move. Yeah.
But I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even as you're talking about like rolling a die, like there's a correct way and an incorrect way to roll it. There's like, you get into all these edge cases where it's like, oh, that's like sort of leaning on a piece of paper, or something. And you're like, well, but I kind of want that number, so I'm not going to bring it up. And maybe people won't make me re-roll it, or like it hit the floor, or there's like, probably the best, most random way to do it is that everybody has like a approved dice tower that they roll everything through. But then it's like, then you have a dice tower on the table. It's like,
yeah,
there's like all this stuff that goes into it. You know, and then there's like the, well, what if your dice is weighted incorrectly? Right. Like, you know, like some of that too. You know, so it's like there's, like, then that's just on the dice end of things. But there's also just something really fun about rolling a d20 too. Yeah. And I think it is because it's like, it, there's that moment of it sort of bouncing around that you're like, well, what's it going to be? You know, versus reaching your hand into a bag. So even if you had a bag with the numbers 1 through 20 on them, you're reaching in. It's just like, yeah, like that, it just, it doesn't feel, it feels like you've lost sort of the, like the fun drama of like watching the die roll, and instead you're just watching someone sort of rummage around in a bag right. to pull something out. Like, even again, even if the result is exactly the same, I think there's also an element too of like, I think when I watch someone else put their hand in a bag, I'm like, do they feel something on the chits that I'm not feeling, that they can like, that they're using to it, like it sort of like hides the randomness in a way.
And what if the chit has like a little bit of torn, you know, cardboard on the side, you know?
Like, and
you could feel that, and
you could have a gentleman's agreement, right? Or a gentle person's agreement to like, don't feel for that, but like if you can.
Yeah, you know, but one thing we haven't mentioned is, you know, obviously there are digital dice rollers, and it's interesting to me that we use phones and digital stuff that has invaded every aspect of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know anyone that uses a digital dice roller at the table if there's an option to roll physical dice.
Yeah.
But that's probably, I guess it depends on the dice app, but I assume that is probably a better, the cleanest way to get like as close to randomness as you can, right?
Yeah, all the computer scientists are starting to fire up their email to send us a message. But like, yeah, like you can please save it, right? Like randomness, I know, is complicated. But yeah, it's just, but there's something about the, like, even if you're rolling for like a fireball in D&D, right? Like you're rolling like a fistful of D8s, right? To get the number that you need to, like, it's just more fun to roll that, like the fistful of D8s, than it is to, you know, pull up your dice app and like type in how many D8s you need, you know, to like, to get the correct resolution.
Here's a question for you. What is the point at which you, Chris, stop feeling like you have a firm grasp of the odds?
Yes. That's a good question, right? And that kind of gets back to the heart of it. I think for me, it's pretty quick. I think once you start adding in dice of sort of different types, like together, then I'm just sort of like, I'm out, right? Like then I'm just sort of trusting. I'm trusting that like, I know sort of the bottom number and the top number that can happen. But other than that, like who knows sort of what's in the middle. Yeah. What about you?
I'm the same way. When the more dice you are rolling at a time, the less good my brain is at evaluating odds. You know, I've played enough, you know, 2d6 games that I understand rough, more or less kind of the probability curve of rolling that, but 4d6, 66, a d6 and a d8, you know, at that point I've played a lot of really fun games that use dice like that, like the Genesis system that powers Star Wars and a number of other games has you rolling all the types of dice, and the GM, as a GM, you're adding dice in or removing them from the pool based on the circumstances. Mm-hmm. And I've never doing this. I am just trusting that the game has figured out the odds at this point, you know, because I don't really know if I add one trouble die to this, I don't really know how that's going to affect how much more difficult it's going to make success. That can be fun, but those also aren't my favorite type of die resolution systems, specifically because I don't really know what I'm doing to the odds as GM. In a way, you know, I understand take a -2 penalty on this D20 roll. I understand what that does, but
do you understand what that does because you've sort of done it enough that you have a feel for that? Or do you think that's something that's intuitive for just someone who roughly understands how math works? Like the first time you're sitting down to play, you know, play your D20 system, do you sort of understand like, oh, like if I have to roll over a 10, that's going to be a 50% chance of success? Or do you think that's something that you sort of learn as part of playing the game?
That's an interesting question. Mm-hmm. I think I've just played enough that I don't really think about it in terms. I mean, I feel like if you GM long enough, you just kind of, you do get a sort of intuition of what is going to be too tough and what's too easy. But when I apply a -2 penalty, I'm not thinking this will make it X percent more difficult to succeed. I'm more just eyeballing it based on hundreds of past games and seeing what a -2 penalty does in a general sense to your chance of success. So I would say if you asked me to explain, even on something really simple, like how does a -2 penalty affect your odds of success on like a D20 or something like that, I would probably be pretty bad at articulating exactly what's happening. So, yeah. And that's like a very, very, very simple example. So
that is interesting. I kind of wonder if you were faced with the actual math behind some of that too, or if that would change your base feelings, your feelings on it. Right.
Right.
Right. Cause if it's like, if what you really want is like, okay, so they're going to roll, I need this to be 20% harder than it is, right? You're like, right, so there's a number, like there's an actual number that you can apply, like there's an equation you could figure out.
Yeah.
Our friend Toby, who's been on the podcast before, he could figure it out.
I've been thinking of Toby this whole conversation.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Why did we not
kidnap
him and make him appear on this show?
Yeah. You know, we had him on, I don't know, like a while ago, maybe a year or so ago, to actually talk about some probability stuff, and that was a super fun episode if you want to go back and listen to it. But but it's like, so there is a number you can apply to say like this is now 20% harder, or this is now 50% harder, like that. Yeah. But like it really kind of comes down to sort of like narratively, like what's the feel behind it? Because like if you tell your players like, okay, well I've done the calculation and I want this to be 20% harder, so you know this is going to be, you're going to take a two on this, right? It's like that's one thing, but if you're just like, but if you can approach them, like if they're about to roll and it's like, okay, because you are whatever, like you take a -2, right? Like no one really wants to hear about the probability part. I don't think, they want to hear the, like the narrative reason why. It's like, oh, yeah, like this, you know, this orc is behind, you know, cover. So you need to take a -2 penalty to your, yeah, to like what you're doing, right? Like that's more interesting than like, I think this should be a little bit harder, so let's make this 20% harder.
Well, the first games I played and the most formative ones for me were somewhat percentile based. It was like Rollmaster and some sister games. And in those games, you are rolling D100. And so, and your skills are expressed as like a +25. And that's, I don't think it gets wonky because you can go above a 100. with bonuses and stuff. I don't know what that does.
Yeah.
But that at least has the feel of like, I have a +25 in horse riding. Mm-hmm. I am 25% more likely to succeed, you know, than this other person that has a 0 in that skill. Yeah. I don't know if that's exactly right. I mean, there's also Call of Cthulhu, which is maybe a more pure percentile game, because I don't think you, because it doesn't go beyond the bounds of like 1 to 100.
Yeah.
In that game, your skills are just expressed as percentages. So if you have a 79 in library use, you have a 79% chance, right, of succeeding.
Yeah. Which is, yeah, it's, and that feels almost like too calculated to me.
So,
right?
Yeah. So that's kind of what I want to bring up about this is it does. I don't really love that. Mm-hmm. I know these systems are much beloved, and people will often say Call of Cthulhu is so successful because it's so easy to grasp its central mechanic. Mm-hmm. It is pretty easy to grasp its central mechanic. I have some side rants about how it's a lie that the system is simple and easy. that it's a collective lie we've been telling ourselves for decades, but I'll save it for another episode. Okay. It is easy to grasp that mechanic. It also feels less like I'm playing a game than rolling a d20. And I don't know if that makes sense. Rolling a d20 and adding and trying to beat a target number. That feels like I'm gambling in a good way.
Yeah.
Like rolling on a Call of Cthulhu skill check feels like, I don't know, like I'm calculating something. And those feel like different experiences to me a little bit.
Yeah, let's actually dig into that a little bit, because that's one thing that I have been thinking about, like this sort of like gambling versus like making a calculation, right? I think is a really good distinction, right? So like when you were playing Wiccan Wander, so like I played Wiccan Wander as well. I think like the mechanic is just really lovely in that game. Like you're flipping over cards. So like you say you want to do something, and there's a little bit of like back and forth, but then it's like sort of like, okay, you need to get the card that you want within three or four cards, whatever it may be. So you flip them over, right? And like any of those cards you flip over are sort of like, they're in your discard pile now, right? So they are not affecting the probability of the rest of the deck, right? If that makes sense. So if you were to flip over all, if you're trying to find a lore card and the first, you flip over all of your lore cards like right away, like on the top of your deck, and there's no more lore cards in that deck, you're never going to draw lore until you exhaust the deck, right? Like, so like right. Yeah. Which almost happened to you, I think, in the game that you were playing.
Yeah.
But so it's like, right. Like, but that feels really, I don't know. It feels like it's out of your hands in a way that rolling a die doesn't, to me, right? Like even if the probabilities again work out exactly the same, like there's something about it that feels like, it feels almost like mystical, like when you're flipping cards over, like it's like the randomness has shifted over to something else, right? When you roll a die, it feels like you are sort of controlling the randomness in a way. And when you're reaching into a bag of chits, it feels like it's also like sort of out of your hands too. But it's like there's like this feel part of it that does not, that I can't get my hands around, that I can't really fully articulate.
Like there's all sorts of intangible things about these different mechanics. So like one thing about like the Wiccan Wander or a mechanic where you're drawing cards is it's like a tense drawn out process, and you're holding your breath as you flip each card. And there's an experience of kind of dread and excitement as you keep flipping cards and keep hoping that the next one will be what you need, that you can't really replicate that experience with a single die roll, for example.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's a better experience, although I liked it a lot, but there's, you know, and that's even independent of like, do I understand the odds of what I'm doing? Like that, this is adding a different feel to the action I'm taking than I would have if the GM just said, all right, yeah, roll D20.
Yeah. It's like the flipping over cards, right? So like if you have four card types or whatever, it's sort of like asking for a sequence of D4 rolls, right? It's like, yeah, it's like, okay, you need to get a three, but you're going to roll until you get a three, right? So like you roll once and then you roll again, right? But like the card, like there's just like this very physical action of doing it too.
And I will say with the Arkham Horror withdrawing chits out of a bag, there was an experience that, like I said, not my favorite thing, but it created an experience I don't think I could replicate otherwise. There was one time where somebody reached in, grabbed a chit, and had it clenched in their hand, had not looked at it. And then they remembered something, and then they remembered a mechanic, and then spent some time, we all spent time debating, should you burn that resource or whatever, you know, before you, once... It was a weird feeling knowing that like fate had decided and it was there in his hand, and we were making decisions about whether we needed to invest extra resources to like bump to like improve it or not without, and I know that's kind of meaningless, but it was exciting. It was like a weird feeling of like the die is already, it's like if you rolled a die, but that couldn't look at it until you had decided how many resources you were going to expend.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It sounds silly when I say it like this, but it was a feeling I had at the table.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, because like, so right, like I'm sure rules as written, the game would have loved you to have kind of declared everything before you reached in to grab the chit.
Yes.
But like, I really like, again, as someone who is a like avowed chit draw hater, but like, right, like I mean that thought of just like someone's holding that and it's like you are like one sneeze away from accidentally revealing it, or like, yes, you know, something like, yeah, that. It's like, hold your hand tight. Like, this is important. We need to figure this out.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you've created this very physical action, you know, along with it. Like, that's pretty cool. Like, I don't know if that's sort of supported by the game system, or if that's something you accidentally stumbled upon.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the intended way you do it. I mean, if this is a tournament, maybe you would be penalized or something for this, but you know, I mean, for the purposes of figuring out what to do, it did not affect, it did not give us any knowledge we didn't already have. It just made the conversation more fraught somehow, in a good way, more tense than it would be if we had just had this conversation and then he reached into the bag. I don't know why that is.
Yeah. Do you, when you run games these days, do you roll in the open or do you roll behind a screen?
I have taken to rolling in the open as an intentional change, because I used to never, most of my life, I have never rolled in the open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I mostly roll in the open, although, like, you know, running online games and stuff, it's like, it's sort of hard to do that.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. Yeah.
But there is something, I think, to the, like, the GM has rolled and now we're having the discussion, right? Like, versus we're having the discussion and then the GM has rolled. And then the GM rolls after the discussion too.
It's
like, I mean, I really like that kind of, it takes, right? Like you sort of like let fate decide, but then you're having this conversation with the knowledge that the number is set. Right. And then it's like, you know, especially if the GM is participating in that conversation, then you're starting to get into like human psychology too, of like, they know what the number is. Are they going to let on that, like, you know, the way the conversation is going to result, you know, in a poor outcome for you, you know, or not, or like a good outcome, you know, or are they going to try to guide you a little bit in that conversation?
Yeah, there was an exchange that happened a lot when we were playing Rollmaster, which has these critical hit tables. And we would joke about this because like I would roll on the critical hit table to see what bad thing had happened to a player who had just been hit. And then, the GM would look up and would say, "Were you wearing a helmet?"
Yes. Like, and, like, yes, like, absolutely I was.
Of course the answer is always like, well, of course I'm wearing a helmet. But it's that, but that's like, that's touching on that like kind of funny experience. Like, it feels different if you say, okay, I'm going to dodge this monster's attack, and then the GM rolls to see if it hits you anyway, versus where if the GM rolls behind the screen and then asks you if you were going to try to dodge or not.
Yes.
You
know, yeah. It like, yeah. And I think that gets into like the fun of the game too, right? Like, like if you're playing against a computer, right? Like the computer like knows how to do the ordering of everything correctly and make sure, make sure you're answering all those questions beforehand. But like, man, I do live for those moments at the table where it's like, oh, right, there was this rule I needed to check in on, and like, this is going to be very important. You tell me exactly what what you were doing. And then there's a little bit of like a social, like, social like contract too that is happening, I think, in that moment as well. Of like, are you going to tell the truth, right? Like, were you actually wearing your helmet? Were you not? Right.
Yeah.
And that's sort of up to you. And right. And that's going to have a narrative effect, as well on the game, if not a mechanical effect. And like, yeah, you could fudge a little bit. Right. I mean, I think everybody fudges at the table a little bit, but you could fudge and be like, yeah, I did have my helmet, or I didn't, or like I was wearing a different hat, or, you know, whatever, you decide to say in that moment. But it's like, but everybody sort of knows that the response to that is going to affect the outcome.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so you have this layer of like, you've chosen to take an action, you've rolled to get a random result, and then on top of that, then you have this like social aspect of like, okay, but you know, here's another piece of information that we didn't clarify beforehand.
Yeah.
You know, all going into the result of like, did the crocodile bite you in half or not? You know,
here is my challenge to myself, and like you, Chris, and listeners, I invite you to think about this too. Play some other games and then ask yourself, what was the unique feel that produced? Is it some, and is that something that I could, even imperfectly bring into other games, right? So for me, playing Wick and Wonder, the feel that that gave me was that agonized anticipation as you flipped over each card. Yeah, playing Arkham Horror, it was that thrill of like, it's already been drawn, and now I have, and now we have to make a decision about it. It was that thrill of the dice, like literally already having been cast, right?
Yes.
But so I don't know. So how might, I mean, the next game I'm going to run is going to be like Pathfinder. Mm-hmm. So, which doesn't have those things. Is there something I can do to bring a piece of those thrilling feelings into, you know, your regular old D&D-ish type of game? So that's going to be my challenge. And the next game I run, I don't know, you know, maybe I will, maybe a couple of times on a couple of rolls, I will roll early and then make the PCs have the conversation in, you know, not knowing what I rolled. I'm going to try it.
You need to roll your D20 20 times, right? Results, and then roll your D20 then, you know, each time that they, that they need one. And then you reference the table that you've created. I think that's really good. I think, what I might do. So like, I mean, you know, right. Like, so I've definitely run my share of like interesting resolution mechanics in my day, but I think what I might do is like, just go down and look at all the board games on my shelf and sort of see what's sort of interesting about this game that, you know, you could maybe bring in. I think there's a lot of like, I don't know, there's just sort of the nature of board games. I think board games and tabletop games sort of go hand in hand in a lot of ways, but it's like, yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff happening in the board game space that like, there's no reason why I couldn't get carried over into your game table too.
Do you want to really mess with your players, Chris?
Yeah, of course.
The next time you run a game, print out like 100 numbers, random numbers between 1 and 20, and just go down the list instead of rolling the dice.
Yeah.
Just use those numbers as if you had rolled the dice and see how that changes the feel of what you're doing.
Oh, they're going to hate it. Yeah. okay. So actually I kind of love that. That would be a fun mechanic of like you even make that public information. So you put it in the middle of the table and it's like, okay, every time you're going to roll, we're going to take the next one on the list. And it's like, everybody can kind of see like, we have 4 ones in a row coming up. Like, how can we expand those in an interesting way? Like,
is there goodness.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right.
Okay. We have to now do this, Chris, somehow.
Yeah.
Like,
that's
this
great.
Okay. But hey, let's go ahead and wrap up. Do you have any final thoughts, or did we hit on everything you wanted to say?
No, that hits on everything. So I wanted to mention, right? Like, so the next two episodes, we're going to be doing our annual Build a Dungeon, Play a Dungeon episodes as well. That's what you'll hear for the rest of the year on the podcast. And then we'll be back with you in the new year with kind of our normal schedule after that. So I'm really excited. These are always a highlight of my year. And then I know, so we're going to be recording in a couple days. We're going to be recording the Build the Dungeon, and I'm very excited for who we have lined up for that. So just stay tuned.
Definitely a highlight of the year for me.
So look for those. Again, we'll those will just come out on normal days, and then our hope is that as you're doing your holiday travel and stuff around Christmas time, that you have some longer stuff to listen to, and we always try to make those family friendly as well too, so you can just listen to them in the car with your kids.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, all right,
so I think that does it for us. So we are Roll for Topic. We're part of the Roll for It Media Podcasting Network. Our sister show, The Splat Book, with John Corey, with Jess, and with Ben, is great. So as we alluded to, Andy was on the last episode for their Wick and Wander actual play. So I think the second part of that drops the week after you're hearing this, if you listen to this on the day it releases. I listened to the first half. It's really delightful. Andy's character is pretty great, and I don't think it's a spoiler to say that Andy makes some let's call them interesting game time decisions that maybe don't go so well for him.
I'm feeling judged now. I'm trying to remember what I did.
It was nothing bad. It was just the cards were not in your favor. So it's really fun. And then John, I will say, has been doing just an A+ job with the audio editing on these as well. So he's sprinkled in some extra little like audio tidbits that I think really actually add quite a bit to the experience of listening. So it's good. All right. But I think that does it for us. So I've been Chris Salzman.
I've been Andy Rao.
Remember, if your players are having fun, you're a great GM.